Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 22, The Unexpected Task.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? We're gonna have a problem here.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the victors. Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
Hi, and welcome to the Real Weird Sisters. I'm Martha.
I'm Alice.
And today we're here to talk about Chapter 22 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Alice, we have a special announcement to make here for listeners who aren't keeping track, which is probably most of you. This is our 100th episode that we have released.
That is pretty crazy, and I think it's pretty perfect that this happens to be the very book chapter where the Weird Sisters, our namesake, are finally mentioned. And we'll get to that later in the chapter, but I do think that's pretty serendipitous.
It is serendipitous. I think it's fate, actually. This is a very important chapter because it is the first mention of the Weird Sisters. Not the real Weird Sisters, that's us, but it is, of course, a perfect way to celebrate our 100th episode. I can't believe that we've released 100 episodes. That is truly crazy to me.
I know, and that's of course, across all different kinds of episodes, not including our patron casts, but all the ones on the main feed. So our book club, and then also our Sorting Hat, and our preview show is included in that as well, and then some of our reaction shows. So it's not just book club episodes, but we've done 100 episodes, and like you said, it's hard to believe, but it is exciting. And you know, I'm really starting to feel like we're getting on a roll with this show.
Well, knock on wood, Alice. actually, I'm here to say that I'm resigning.
Don't scare our listeners. I know they're all so devoted.
Well,
they'll be heartbroken if you say that.
When I started the podcast with you, I said I will do 100 episodes and then I will be done. And I'm not a woman to go back on my word.
What can I do to convince you to stay?
Well, will you do an impression in this episode?
I think I will.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see if there's a 101st episode for you, listeners. Maybe if you pledge on Patreon, then there
okay,
will be.
This is getting a little bit goofy.
Okay, well, Alice, did you like this chapter?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was a lot of fun. A lot of comic relief, so that was really enjoyable. And yeah, just a lot of great character moments.
Yeah, it was a fun one. It definitely felt short, I guess, or less impactful than a lot of the chapters we've had recently, which was kind of a nice break. Like you said, the comic relief was there a lot, and it just kind of felt like a nice kind of breath of fresh air after a couple really heavy chapters that we've had recently.
Yeah, agreed. Last chapter had some comic relief as well, but there was also just like the whole house elf thing is just kind of dark and pulls
right.
you down, so this one is, like, funny and not in a dark way.
Well, speaking of last week and some of the less, well, I guess this is the less heavy parts, we did have an email from one of our listeners, Hannah, this week, who emailed us with one of the questions that we raised. As we stated on the podcast, neither of us are whiskey connoisseurs or mixologists, so we did ask the question of, you know, what really is single malt whiskey? So Hannah answered that for us.
Right. So for those of you who don't know, like we didn't, single malt whiskey, Hannah writes, is malt whiskey from a single distillery. That is whiskey distilled from fermented mash made exclusively with malted grain, usually barley, as distinguished from unmalted grain. So she said that's really technical, but it's basically whiskey made at one place. So that's kind of interesting. That's not at all what I was picturing it.
No,
as.
And I mean, I love having a podcast because it means I don't have to Google things anymore. Honestly, I mean, I'm sure I could have gotten that answer from a quick Google search. And Hannah did say, thanks, Wikipedia, in her own answer. But it was great to just have that answered for me because I mean, it's something that we asked on the question or on the, it was a question we asked on the podcast, but it was also one that I was like not that curious about. So I didn't really feel like I wanted to Google it. But I'm really glad she answered it for us. So thank you, Hannah.
Yeah, definitely. So I enjoy when people write in to answer our questions. It's fun. And it's good for us to be able to update the audience as well, for those of you who don't go out and Google things.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, we also got some feedback just about our discussion of house elves. And People had some really interesting comments both in our Facebook group and on Twitter. So if you aren't already in the Facebook on the Facebook page or following us on Twitter, you should definitely do that because we have some really interesting conversations on both those platforms.
Yeah, for sure.
So that being said, I think it's time we jump into this chapter. We start the chapter with it's very clearly, yay, Harry and Ron are friends again. They're goofing off in the back of the class. All is right with the world once more.
Right. It's like once Harry is friends with Ron again, like his studies go out the window.
Yeah, exactly. They're in the back of the Transfiguration classroom having a fight with sword fight with a couple of Fred and George's fake wands. Ha ha ha. Classic.
Yeah, just horsing around, a couple of bros.
Yeah, Ron's holding a tin parrot and Harry a rubber haddock. Oh, ha ha ha.
This is a funny prank.
Yeah, I just don't really get, like, I could see doing this in History of Magic, like, where Binns does not pay attention and the subject material is pretty boring. But, I mean, this sounds like an interesting lesson, and obviously McGonagall is going to notice them doing this.
I do think it's very realistic of two 14-year-old boys.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, just the goofing off and, like, I don't know. Not that girls wouldn't do that, too, because I think they would, but it's just showing their immaturity. I mean, I think a lot of the time we do forget that Harry is only 14 in this book. Like, he's really pretty young still, so I can see why he's kind of just a goofy kid sometimes.
Yeah. I guess that makes sense. This lesson sounds pretty fun. They've been changing guinea pigs into guinea fowl. And ha ha ha, Neville still has feathers. Neville sucks at magic. Ah, classic. And yeah, that just sounds like a pretty fun activity. I always like Transfiguration class descriptions because it's fun to see the different animals they're playing around with. I hope it doesn't hurt them in any way.
I know. I don't think PETA would like this too much.
No. Neither would Gale.
Good one.
Thank you. But yeah, I mean, there's probably some questions there about animal testing. I mean, they're probably not harming animals, right?
I'm guessing not. I don't think, like, if a human can transfigure themselves, it doesn't really hurt them. Like, the only question for me is when it's students who don't really know what they're doing.
They make mistakes, yeah.
Yeah. But I think, like, most of the time, stuff that they mess up can be easily rectified, so.
Well, pain can't be reversed.
Well, memories can be modified.
Oh, good point. So, if any of these, well, I guess it begs the question of whether we think that guinea pigs and guinea fowl have memories, but.
That's true.
Is Neville in any way harmed the guinea pigs by leaving them, or. Yeah, oh no, sorry, they were transforming guinea fowl into guinea pigs. I'm sorry if I messed that up.
I've never even heard of guinea fowl before.
I think I have only because of having read this and, like, remembering that phrase. I think they're kind of colorful. I'm not really sure. I might be making that up.
Okay, I just Googled them, and they kind of look like a peacock.
So they are colorful?
A little bit of blue, but it's mostly black.
Hmm. Pretty.
Yeah. They're kind of weird looking. Kind of look like a peacock or a turkey or something.
Like a cross of a peacock and a turkey?
No.
A peaky?
Yeah, kind of, I guess.
Hmm. Well, interesting.
If you have never seen a guinea fowl before, I do encourage you to Google it, because it's hard for me to describe.
It's definitely a shrinking spell that's happening as well, then. Not just the transformation.
Well, I guess I can't really tell from the photo, but it looks big to me.
Yeah. I mean, guinea pigs aren't too big.
No, guinea pigs are pretty small, so.
Yeah. Well, I do love McGonagall being sassy with Ron and Harry here. She's like, now that Potter and Weasley have decided to act their age, and she gives an angry look at them.
Well, honestly, I feel like they were acting their age when they were goofing off.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. They should be acting older than their age. And so McGonagall is about to make this big announcement of what's about to happen. The Yule Ball. It's a traditional part of the Triwizard Tournament and an opportunity for us to socialize with our foreign guests. Now,
all 10 of them.
Now, will you be Lavender Brown when we roleplay this here?
Sure.
Now, the ball will be open only to 4th years and above, although you may invite a younger student if you wish. Great shrill giggle, Alice.
How was it?
It was good. I thought you'd be better at that than me, because my giggles are more likely to be hoarse than shrill, I think.
I think, yeah, you do a hoarse laugh.
Or a chortle. We did get a couple comments about the chortle that I did, I think it was last week, was not really a chortle. It was more of a guffaw.
I agree. I think it was more of a guffaw. You need to work on the chortle.
Okay, how's this? That's exactly what I did last time. Well, because I guess what I did was more like my Goofy impression.
Yeah.
Which is just... Goofy
the dog, yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's not really relevant to this.
Normally, I don't actually giggle in a very high pitch. I usually do more of a, like, low chuckle.
No, you do an airless laugh where you go...
That's true. I do that lately, too.
It's very weird.
I go nearly airless.
You go literally airless. It's very strange.
But yeah, I was trying to channel my inner teenage girl with the shrill giggle. I can definitely relate to Parvati and Lavender in this scene with the fighting not to laugh thing. Like, this is how I was in high school. And I know it annoys Harry, but... Well, I don't think it's very realistic to try to outlaw giggling because it was pretty hard for me to not giggle all the time.
It annoys Harry because McGonagall is ignoring them when she was telling Ron and Harry off. Says he thought it was distinctly unfair. But I agree. I think it's easier to control yourself from having a fake sword fight with fake wands than it is to laugh at something with your friends.
Right. Well, and then later on, Harry thinks that giggling should be outlawed.
Good idea.
Clearly, Harry doesn't understand what it's like to be a teenage girl. It's pretty hard to not laugh all the time.
I would say that is the lesson of this chapter, that Harry does not understand what it is like to be a teenage girl.
Yeah, definitely that's the theme here.
Yeah, it really is. And that's what provides so much comic relief in this chapter. Also, McGonagall is really funny in this scene, especially. She is. She goes, "Will you be Lavender again?"
Sure.
She goes, "The Yule Ball is, of course, a chance for us all to, let our hair down." Okay, that was worse.
I couldn't do it anymore.
You're supposed to press your hand against your mouth to stifle the sound of your giggles.
I don't know that that will come across too well on the mic. Well, it's pretty funny here because McGonagall is, even though she doesn't tell off Lavender and Parvati, like, she's in such contrast to them. She's so serious. She doesn't seem to find this funny at all.
I did like how it says that Harry could see what was funny this time.
Yes, because it says, after she said that they will all have the opportunity to let their hair down, it says, "Professor McGonagall, with her hair in a tight bun, looked as though she had never let her hair down in any sense."
It's pretty funny.
Yeah. And I think she's definitely giving off that impression in this moment.
Does she wear her hair down at the ball? I'm pretty sure she doesn't.
I don't remember, but we'll have to keep a watch out for that.
Yeah, we'll find out, I guess. that's next chapter, so stay tuned, folks, or read ahead. So then McGonagall's talking. She says, like, "I will be most seriously displeased if a Gryffindor student embarrasses the school in any way." And then everybody leaves, but McGonagall calls Harry out over for a word.
And Harry proceeds gloomily to the teacher's desk.
Right. He assumed it had something to do with his headless rubber haddock. I don't know why she would just call Harry over and not Ron. Maybe she's like, "Potter, you are a representative of this school." Anyway, so the reason that McGonagall pulls Harry aside is to tell him that the champions and their partners.
What partners?
They're a wot.
I'll have a wot.
And yes, your partners for the Yule Ball, Potter. Your dance partners.
Dance partners.
Harry's inside seems to curl up and shrivel. But I love it. I don't dance.
Oh, I just love it because Professor McGonagall is just, I don't know, it's so weird because she doesn't seem very into the Yule Ball herself, but then at the same time she's really enforcing the fact that Harry will have to be there and, like, leading the whole school.
She's really into the formalities of it, too.
Yeah. So she lets him know that the champions and the partners will open the ball, and this kills me. It says, Harry had a sudden mental image of himself in a top hat and tails, accompanied by a girl in the sort of frilly dress Aunt Petunia always wore to Uncle Vernon's work parties. Yeah, I like to picture Harry in a top hat and tailcoat.
I just love picturing this whole scene, this interaction with McGonagall and Harry is so funny, just how Harry's being, like, so... I love how he's gloomy at the beginning, and then his insides curling up and shriveling. He's getting all embarrassed, and he's hating the idea, and McGonagall's just being so, like, strict about it. She's like, it is traditional. You make sure you get yourself a partner, Potter.
I kind of feel like she's one of those people who's just, like, I don't know, just enforcing policy in this moment, like, clearly, like, does not actually want to be telling them about the Yule Ball, but then because, like, she has to, she's really, like, leaning into her role.
Yeah, definitely.
And I so think she's, like, going really a little overboard.
She's really good at just, like, being the rule enforcer, and she knows she's good at that, too. So I just love picturing this scene with McGonagall and Harry. Anytime the two of them interact, just the two of them, or I guess, like, with Umbridge in there, too, or Ron there, whatever, it's just always a great scene.
Yeah, I just see it as, like, they had a staff meeting.
Yes.
And Dumbledore was like, you know, you will have to have everyone tell the students about the dance, and McGonagall was not into it at the staff meeting, but then she knows it's the rules, so she's going to really, like, embrace it.
Yeah, and at the staff meeting... I mean, let's be realistic here. I'm sure that they don't have Hogwarts staff meetings because it's not organized enough for that. But at the staff meeting, right, at the staff meeting, Dumbledore's like, and Minerva, you will be in charge of informing Harry of the rules. And she's like, oh, more rules to enforce, even though she doesn't like the concept of the ball itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... Of course, Harry is very, very nervous. He says he thought he'd rather have another round with the dragon. Okay, Harry.
Well, Martha, remember, once he looked at that little miniature dragon, he came to the realization that maybe Hagrid was right after all. Dragons aren't so bad.
Yeah, Hagrid had a point. maybe not. So
again, if you're ever thinking Hagrid had a point, you might want to take a good hard look in the mirror.
Seriously. So then we get another reminder that, yes, Harry stays at Hogwarts every year for Christmas because his home life is really, really depressing and not at all appealing for a holiday break. But this year, everybody is staying, or just about everybody. Everyone in the fourth year and above, at least. And the girls all seem to be very obsessed with the coming ball. Girls are giggling and whispering in the corridors. Girls shrieking with laughter as boys pass them. Girls excitedly comparing notes on what they were going to wear on Christmas night. I've always thought it was a little bit strange that the Yule Ball does take place on Christmas Day. Why
I know
you about that.
I totally agree. Like, I guess the thing is, it's not like they're with their families.
Right.
So it's not like they have to come back together, like, from being with their families. They don't really have anything else better to be doing. So
yeah, that's a good point.
It kind of makes sense, but at the same time, it kind of, like, takes up all of Christmas then. Like, you have to get ready for the dance and stuff. And
Yeah. Well,
I don't know about you, Martha, but I was never a huge fan of dances.
No, I neither. Yeah,
I feel like the Yule Ball is much better than most of the high school dances I ever went to.
Well, of course, they have the Weird Sisters performing.
That's true. Our very namesake appears in this chapter, or in the next chapter, but the first mention of it is in this chapter, and that's pretty exciting.
So this is a very important chapter for that reason alone.
It is.
I was going to say that this is not a very fun Christmas for the house elves, is it?
Do you think they ever... Well, the more work they have to do, the more fun, I think.
Well, yeah, actually, that's a good point. I mean, we're just putting this human lens on it, like we said last week, and I think they actually are happy doing this.
They like to be busy and doing stuff, so...
And helping others.
Yeah, so honestly, like, throwing a big party or throwing a big dance, it's going to be a lot of setup and a lot of cleanup, and that probably brings joy to them.
That's true. And speaking of setup, we get a lot of setup in this chapter of who is Harry going to ask for the Yule Ball. And
that's pretty much the entire purpose of the chapter.
Yes. So as Ron asks, got any idea who you're going to try? And Harry didn't answer. He knew perfectly well whom he'd like to ask, but working up the nerve was something else. Cho was a year older than he was. She was very pretty. She was a very good Quidditch player. And she was also very popular. So dramatic!
It is. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He barely knows Cho. I don't really see why.
I know!
Why he's so fixated on her, but okay.
He's really built her up in his mind.
I think so, yeah.
But how could, I mean, of course, the real Cho is even better than... even better than the Cho that he's imagined in his mind, because we know she is just a barrel of fun.
Okay, well, maybe she is in this year, this book. She might be a little bit more fun.
Not in the movie.
That's true.
Yeah, and so then Ron points out that girls are probably going to be lining up to go to the ball with Harry, that he's the school champion, he's famous. And he, well, I guess he doesn't even say that he's famous, but... Harry just thinks that it's because Ron is trying to, like, suck up to him after being rude about Harry being famous earlier this year, but he actually turns out to be right, believe it or not.
Yeah, so this is kind of the start of, like, the Harry being super popular with girls plotline.
Yeah, and being super awkward with girls.
Also, this chapter is kind of the beginning of Harry and Ron are... really pretty terrible, especially Ron, to girls.
Yes, very vain.
So, yeah, it's kind of an interesting start. But, yeah, Harry gets quite a few different offers. The first one is a curly-haired third-year Hufflepuff girl. You'd think she'd be supporting the real Hogwarts champion.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, Cedric Lee. that was bad.
And this is kind of... so she's the first one to ask him, and Harry's so taken aback that he just says no.
I feel like he doesn't say it like that. I feel like he says, like, oh no, or like, no thank you, or something, like, really quick. But I don't think he said no.
No.
And she walks off looking rather hurt.
Well, I don't blame her. No, it's kind of rude. Like, he doesn't seem to have, like, any sort of excuse as to why he's not going to go with her.
No. Yeah, I love it. And then the next one is a second-year girl who doesn't really, she's not described, but the next one is described as...
a fifth-year who looked as though she might knock him out if he refused.
Yeah, and she was quite good-looking, said Ron fairly. So I guess she was, if Ron's saying that.
Yeah, she must have been, like, a 10.
Yeah. Her nose must have been dead center. And Harry's like... she was a foot taller than me. Imagine what I'd look like trying to dance with her.
Well, his top hat would probably make him look about the same height.
True. We're really robbed of seeing Harry in a top hat ever in the books or movies.
I know. We never get a chance.
Like, yeah, they change up the look of the dress robes a little bit. You'd think they could have just put a top hat in with the ensemble in the movie.
In Fantastic Beasts, Newt wear a top hat at some point?
Maybe.
I feel like he would wear a top hat.
I could see it for sure. I think you might be right.
Well, taking place in a different era.
Yeah, like, true.
Yeah. But yeah, I wish Harry would wear a top hat, especially like on short Daniel Radcliffe. Like, I feel like that would be really funny.
Exactly. Then Harry's speculating again. Maybe all these girls are just asking him because he's famous. But
yeah, they are.
But it wouldn't be a problem if Cho had asked him. But then, so we get kind of a nice look into how everything has improved quite a bit since the first task. It says that he's life has definitely improved. Everybody at Hogwarts besides the Slytherins is being much nicer to him. He's seeing fewer support Cedric Diggory badges around. And then we get some foreshadowing, because one of the reasons that Harry's feeling good is that there has not yet been a Hagrid story in the Daily Prophet.
Right, and that's yet to come. Rita right. hasn't gotten her true dirt yet.
Exactly. So really, the reason that she was interviewing Hagrid a couple chapters ago was just to get some dirt on Harry, which Hagrid, of course, didn't give to him. So, or give to her. So this is a funny conversation with Hagrid and Harry and Ron and Hermione.
Yeah, basically, Hagrid's talking about how she was trying to grill him on, like, to try to get dirt on Harry, like you said. And Harry and Ron are kind of just taking it in, like, pretty good-naturedly, just kind of joking around with Hagrid. So Harry's like, of course she did. She can't keep writing about what a tragic little hero I am. It'll get boring.
Right.
And Ron's like, she wants a new angle. You were supposed to say Harry's a mad delinquent.
And Hagrid goes, but he's not. He's genuinely shocked.
Hagrid does not really strike me as being really one for sarcasm.
No, definitely not. I don't think he really gets it most of the time. And, I mean, that's fine, I guess.
He's very earnest.
He is very earnest, and I guess that's a nice characteristic to have.
Actually, the listener that wrote in about the single malt whiskey also included something about Hagrid in there. And she was talking about how in the last book it was really interesting to her how the questions Rita was kind of asking and how she was interacting with Hagrid reminded her a lot of how Umbridge interacted with Hagrid. And, you know, I had never thought of that comparison, but I think it is pretty similar. What do you think, Martha?
Yeah, I definitely think it's similar. And actually, I don't mean to sound like a know-it-all because I don't think that I did talk about this, but I have always thought of that because the scenes have a lot of parallels that, I mean, they're in the class and the person, or Rita slash Umbridge, they each just kind of show up unexpected and are Hagrid's really taken aback and flustered by the questions that he's being asked, and also just kind of the tone that both those women take with Hagrid is different than, say, someone like Dumbledore or Harry would take with Hagrid, so.
It's like they're each this, they're really condescending to him, mm-hmm. but, like, in this fake, like, kindergarten teacher kind of a way.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, that's sort of the way that they
are. It's like a child that they're trying to interact with.
Right. And they're similar to that to everybody, but it's even more exaggerated with Hagrid, I think.
Yeah, and poor Hagrid, he just kind of plays right into it, unfortunately. But
yeah.
Except for when it comes to Harry, then he was not, he didn't have to say, I should not have said that right. about Harry.
Well, you might have bent a few rules, Harry, but you're all right, really, aren't you?
Cheers, Hagrid.
Ha ha. Then we have this goofy conversation where Ron asks Hagrid if he's going to go to this ball thing. Hagrid says, thought I might look in on it, yeah. Should be a good do, I reckon.
He says it very gruffly.
I like, should be a good do, I reckon. That's probably one of the weirdest phrases I've ever heard Hagrid say. I'm sure that's a British expression, but it sounds weird.
Well, he's probably busy picturing Madame Maxime right now, so.
Okay, well, let's not take that too far. yeah, I think you're right, though. He's definitely wanting to ask Madame Maxime to the ball. And speaking of the ball, we have a lot of rumors about the Yule Ball that are flying around the school. First of all, there's a rumor that Dumbledore has bought 800 barrels of mulled mead from Madame Rosemurta.
So suddenly Madame Rosemurta is doubling as a headmistress to the French school and somehow, like, also peddling mulled mead.
No, this is Madame Rosemurta, not Madame Maxime.
Oh, no. I'm just so used to, I thought, okay, that makes more sense. I read that as Madame Maxime for some reason.
No. That would be great.
Well, I think I had the single malt whiskey in my head, and I'd just been thinking about Hagrid and Madame Maxime. This mm-hmm. makes a lot more sense that Madame Rosemurta is the one selling it. But yeah, still, I don't know that they have space for 800 barrels.
Also, who's going to drink that? They're all underage besides the professors, so it's just for Dumbledore and Hagrid.
It's of age, Martha, some of the students will be okay.
That's true. All the foreign students, because they had to be 17 to come to the Triwizard. Yeah, so, but that Harry doesn't believe that's a real rumor, or that that's true. But it does seem to be fact, however, that Dumbledore, that he had booked the Weird Sisters.
Not the real Weird Sisters, though, just the Weird Sisters. No, it's not quite as exciting.
They're the fake Weird Sisters. They're fine, but they're not the victors.
Or the I like how
Vickers.
the sentence where it says exactly who or what the weird sisters were, Harry didn't know.
Never having had access to a wizard's wireless.
Yes,
Yeah, so he has deduced that they were a very famous musical group.
so we don't know if they're human or not yet.
No, we don't know if they're who or a what, but clearly he hasn't been listening, or clearly the Weird Sisters are a famous musical group, but the real Weird Sisters, that's different.
That's a very famous podcasting group.
Exactly.
Also available on the WWN.
I wish we were available on the WWN, the Wizarding Wireless Network.
For all we know, we could be.
That's true. We have no way of knowing for sure.
Any of you listeners out there are listening to us on the WWN, please let us know.
Yeah, and like just have a code, we can have a code word or something. You don't have to like specifically articulate that. You could just say like, I don't know.
Let's just have you
Say
say
Vickers.
Vickers, yeah.
That's the
Fine, but
code
not
word.
the Vickers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we have been talking about how some of the professors are being really lenient because it's almost the holidays. So for instance, Flitwick has given up trying to teach them, so he's just letting them play games in class, and he wants to talk to Harry about his perfect summoning charm. Flitwick's always sound like a really fun professor to me.
Yeah, I think he's one of those ones who does strike a pretty good balance between being fun and also being a good professor.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's a Ravenclaw, so he clearly values his subject material, and he's, I'm sure, very knowledgeable and everything too. But I think he's definitely a very personable Ravenclaw.
Yeah, for sure.
And he knows how to relate to his students and have fun in the
Very
class.
charismatic and
Exactly.
fun-loving, yeah. And also, I think he always wins the award for cutest Hogwarts professor.
Well, not in the third movie.
Well, in the book.
Yeah, so then Professor Binns, nothing is stopping him. He's as boring as ever. And Professor McGonagall and Moody are both keeping them working all the time, as usual. And then, of course, Snape gets even worse because it's the holidays. He assigns them a test on the last day of term. So evil he is.
That's what Ron says. Yes, bringing a test on us on the last day. You know, it's actually kind of common, Ron, to have
It's
a test on
extremely common.
the
It is. I guess it's a little frustrating that Snape just announced it like a week before, or I guess a couple days before or something. But, well, it's, I like how it says Snape would no sooner let them play games in class than adopt Harry. Well, you know, that's kind of an ironic line because if only James had died, I bet Snape would have been happy to adopt Harry,
That's true. That's
because
very true.
as a stipulation of romance with Lily.
Whether or not he would have been able to put aside his feelings for James, or like his like feelings of anger toward James, though, like he probably would have been, I don't know. I would wonder if he would be a good adoptive father, or
Oh,
if he would
he
be
100% would.
he'd be like super hard on Harry.
Oh yeah, I mean, he would be the exact same that he is now, except for I mean, maybe a little bit nicer because Lily's still alive, but
Lily would be there like so he'd have to be fake in front of her.
yeah, but like I don't think Snape could really be a I mean, maybe, I don't know. I'm trying to be nice to Snape to appease some of our listeners, but yeah. So then Hermione points out that Ron's not exactly straining himself because he's building a card castle out of his exploding snap pack. And of
That's when
course,
Ron's complaining that Snape is
right.
so evil.
Right. Yeah. And it's pointed out that making a card castle with exploding snap cards is much more interesting than with Muggle cards because of the chance that the whole thing would blow up at any second.
You'd think that Seamus would be playing this all the time since he loves fire.
Yeah. True, very true. This is the game for all the pyromaniacs in our life.
Pretty much it seems like all the wizarding like board games just involve like something blowing up or squirting at
Oh,
you.
totally. I guess, or like being sassy with you, like wizard chess. But,
Yeah.
well, it's Christmas, Hermione. And Harry says this lazily, rereading "Flying with the Cannons" for the 10th time. Oh God! God, that's like all you have to read if that's the only thing you're reading lately.
You'd think he could at least go with, like, just Quidditch through the ages. Like, he's not like, even a Chudley Cannons fan.
Who is?
Just wrong.
Chudley Cannons are horrible. Like, Harry, get another book. This is why we need fiction in the wizarding world. People are reading books like Flying with the Cannons over 10 times.
I know, seriously, like, I'm a big advocate for rereading, but yeah, not for rereading Flying with the Cannons Flying over with the and Cannons, over.
That's like, sounds like a, like, encyclopedia or something, or, I mean,
well, best I picture case... it as, I think it has a lot of photos, yeah, so I'm not picturing Harry actually doing a whole lot of reading, it's basically just, like, the magazine. Captions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. But.
I love, so then Hermione is, like, being super naggy with Harry, she's like, I'd have thought you'd be doing something constructive, Harry, even if you don't want to learn your antidotes. And Harry goes, like what? As he watched Joey Jenkins of the Cannons belt a bludger toward a Ballycastle Bats chaser. Now, Ballycastle...
See what I mean? I do think it's more of a picture book.
Yes, but I do want to mention Ballycastle Bats. Ballycastle is the town in Northern Ireland where I lived in 7th grade, so I was excited to see this, and I never noticed it before. I had noticed Ballycastle as one of the names of the teams in Quidditch Through the Ages when I read it recently, but never noticed that it was actually in the books.
Yeah, that is cool.
So, go Ballycastle Bats. They're my favorite, they're my favorite Quidditch team for sure.
Yeah, you would read Flying with the Bats. It'd be like 10 times.
It'd be like battling with the bats or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so then Hermione, I like how Hermione is being really secretive. She's like,
that egg!
She hisses at him. But like, Harry opened it in front of the entire Gryffindor house. Like, I'm pretty sure they can talk about it openly in the common room. But
Hermione, come on, I've got until Shandy's birthday in February. Yeah,
exactly. He's got until February the 24th.
And actually, we found out we have another patron with the same birthday. That's Alicia, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so it's a very special day for both Harry as being the second day of the second task and for the Real Weird Sisters community.
Yeah, out of our 44 patrons, two of them have the same birthday as the second task. That seems statistically unlikely.
That's kind of seems like fate.
It does. I thought you were going to say fake, like as in that the two of them were lying to us about when their birthdays were.
No. It seems like fate. Destiny, I would say. So if any of our other listeners have a birthday on February the 24th, I think it's a sign. You need to pledge on Patreon today. Patreon.com/realweirdsisters.
Actually, just let us know. I would love to hear if we do have anyone else, because that would be weird.
But the most convenient way to let us know is by pledging $5 a month on Patreon. Okay, I'll stop. They're just kind of, Harry and Ron are saying, like, oh, give him a break about opening the egg, or trying to figure out the egg. And then here come Fred and George, and this is kind of a weird little shady scene between them.
Right, so we're still getting the whole plot, which, honestly, it's, when you read it back and you know what's going on with them, it's kind of a super boring plot.
Yeah, it is.
But when you read it the first time, I think it's intriguing. Fred and George want to send a letter. Actually, it's kind of funny because they ask if they can borrow Pigwidgeon. And Ron's like, why? And Fred goes, because George wants to invite him to the ball.
Well, poor George. He doesn't have a date because Fred's going to ask Angelina later on in this scene. But we don't see who George is going with. Yeah.
You know, we had actually a patron the other day raise this point that it kind of seems like George gets the shaft a little bit.
Oh, and like, I've always felt this way too, so I was super excited when she mentioned this.
Yeah, so like, it's kind of true. It really does feel like a lot of the time Fred is the one who gets to have the good, like, the, like, punchlines in a lot of the moments, and Definitely. Then George kind of doesn't talk as much.
Right.
But, yeah. I don't know.
That was Caitlin who mentioned that, and I totally have always felt that way. And I mean, she said that she thinks that that's actually not textually accurate, but I think it is. I mean, every scene we have, it's really just Fred, like, with all the zingers, and George is just, like, kind of, he kind of echoes Fred, but it's usually George, or it's usually Fred who's starting it.
Now, not to make this too depressing,
oh,
but
God.
Just think about how, you know, George is really not going to be as funny in the future without Fred there to have all the punchlines.
Yeah, you're telling me. So let's just, we don't have any Hedwig in this chapter, but let's have a quick moment of silence just for Fred, because we mentioned him and it's really hard to talk about him without thinking about that. So moment of silence for Fred, please. Yes, and sadly, speaking of moments of silence, we do have another submission from acquaintance of the podcast, Shut Up Tim, who has sent in a new idea for Hedwig's moment of silence. Now, we don't have an actual Hedwig moment in this chapter. Should we still preview this?
I don't know.
For the listeners?
I don't know if we should hold. Maybe we should hold on to it until we have an actual moment.
Okay. Well, we also could just have a moment because we're talking about Pigwidgeon and. Of course.
I mean, I am thinking about Hedwig right now, and yeah, I do miss her. So.
Exactly. So let's just have
let's
our
just
moment
have the
silence.
Moment. Hopefully, this song will be better than last time. I'm gonna try and trust him because I think he means well. I know the last one did not go over well, but I think it's worth playing.
Okay. Well, let's try it.
Hello, Hedwig, our old friend. We've come to mourn you once again. In our hearts you will always be number one on the list for MVP. And your demise has scarred our brains. It's such a pain. And we're here with Hedwig's moment of silence.
Okay, well, it's
oh, I am sorry for that, everyone. That was awful.
It's certainly a little bit quieter than the last one, which I guess he was taking the criticism of it being a moment of silence, but he wanted it to be a little quieter, but wasn't really silent, which is really the way we prefer it.
How about we just show some respect for Hedwig and for the MVB that she was?
Yes.
I don't really care for all the songs, so I'm not comfortable with it, but let's just move on.
Well, we can
leave
it up to the listeners again. We'll do another poll on both Twitter and in our Patreon group, so better pledge on Patreon if you want to vote in that. But yeah, we'll get the results by next week and let you know. I have a feeling, I mean, this was a little bit less offensive than last one, but it was still
pretty offended to my core,
yeah. I mean, at least we didn't have the sound of Hedwig dying in this one.
Very true.
Yeah, but if that's the best thing you could say about a song, then it's not great. Anyway, so Fred and George, of course, are being shady. Ron's like, "Who do you keep writing to, eh?" And Fred says, "Nose out, Ron, or I'll burn that for you, too." Forgot to mention that Ron singes his eyebrows when his exploding snap card castle falls down, or blows up, so... Fred's just doing a sick burn on Ron's eyebrows here and nose.
Yeah. So then we launch into this whole part about who Fred and George are asking to the Yule Ball. And Fred, like you said, he's like, "I'm taking Angelina." And they're like, "Oh, you've already asked her?"
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, "Oh, good point." And then he calls out to Angelina across the room, like, well, he says, "Oi, Angelina."
So Angelina's sitting with Alicia, and Fred's like, "Want to come to the ball with me?" And she says, "All right, then." And she's, like, grinning to Alicia. Why doesn't George just ask Alicia out at that moment?
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if we ever find out who George takes? I don't remember.
I can't remember either. We'll find out in a couple chapters. I feel like we don't...
It's not going to work.
We'll see it in a couple chapters. I feel like we don't really see them that much, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Well, so then Fred's just kind of showing off, like, how easy that was for him to ask out Angelina.
Right. And this scene in the movie is very funny. Of course, the Phelps twins are really hilarious as Fred and George, and they do the, like, miming of dancing, and it's pretty funny. I do like that scene.
Me too. There is a scene in the Yule Ball prep that I really don't care for. Can you guess what that is?
I don't think I remember.
It is Neville dancing.
Sorry, that was the sound of, that was not the sound of Hedwig dying, that was the sound of me remembering the scene with Neville dancing. Oh, no, 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 no. Let's not talk about that right now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so awkward. And
by
so...
the way, that's a scene that does not occur in the books.
No.
If any listeners are having trouble remembering.
No. Oh, God. Ugh. I hate that. That's the worst. Okay, let's just forget about that. So then Ron starts being a bit of a jerk here. Not just a bit. He's like, we should get a move on, you know. Ask someone. He's right. We don't want to end up with a pair of trolls.
Yeah.
At least Hermione stands up for all women here.
Yeah, I'm pretty sick of Ron, and he really is pretty sexist.
Yeah, Ron, take a look in the mirror, bud. You're not that hot yourself.
I know, he really, he's the one who always has, like, a smudge of dirt on his nose, and now he has his eyebrows singed off.
Yeah.
So it's not like he is number one catch around the place.
No, he certainly is not, especially not with that attitude.
Yeah. But Ron, I'd rather go alone than with Eloise Midget and say.
Yeah, okay, that's really rude.
Hermione says... You know, Hermione stands up for her. She says her acne's loads better, and she's really nice. And Ron says her nose is off-center.
That's so awful. I really hate Ron in this moment. I'd like to see if anybody wants to defend him. I really hope none of our listeners want to defend him. I mean, I know he's a 14-year-old boy, and he's just being the way that a lot of 14-year-old boys are, but... It's annoying and it's frustrating to see him like this. I know he's going to develop and mature, but he's not great here.
No, he's not. And then the way he acts with Hermione later is not great either.
Oh, 100% not. Yeah, so then Hermione, she's like, I'm going to bed. And she sweeps off towards the girls' staircase without another word. I don't blame her.
Yeah.
It's gotta get pretty annoying hanging out with two boys all the time. I mean, Harry's not quite as bad about this kind of thing. He definitely isn't great about it either. He doesn't stand up for Eloise, for instance. But, I mean, Hermione, poor Hermione. Like, she's also older than them, too, so that doesn't help.
Well, okay, and then it's just...
at this point.
It just would be nice for her. It's good that later on she gets to be pretty good friends with Ginny, I think, because I just always feel bad for her. Like, she when Crumb asks her to the ball, like... She doesn't even tell her two best friends because she knows that they're going to be weird about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she could, like, only tell Ginny.
Yeah, so it's just kind of, I know that, like, she and Harry and Ron are all really good friends, but, like, they're not always the best friends to her, and, like, they don't always get where she's coming from. So I am glad, like I said, that she does get to be pretty close with Ginny.
Yes, me too. And this book really is the start, I think, of their friendship becoming really close. And we don't see it so much because we find out, but we do find out about it later, that this is the book where, or this is the year that Hermione has encouraged Ginny to, you know, explore her other options with other guys. And that's why Ginny's starting to be more comfortable with Harry.
Right, exactly. Also, I just think, like, Hermione being so mature for her age and... you know, being really smart, it's hard for her to relate with the other girls in her grade. So it's kind of like she can't really find anyone in her grade that's, like, a good match for her as far as, like, being able to talk to her about anything.
Someone to match wits with.
Yeah, exactly, at her level.
Right. So, well, I mean, it doesn't help, like I said, that she was born in September and everybody else was born, like, the next year, basically. Like, she's not only, like, naturally mature for her age, but she's also old for her grade, and that doesn't help.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But, I mean, Hermione, she gets a medal for spending so much time with these boys.
Right, it's like, in some ways, Harry and Ron are more like her than the, like, the girls in her grade.
I think in many ways, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially
most
Harry.
Ways. That's why she's close with them.
And really, Ron's the main problem. It's not really Harry.
Harry just hasn't actually spent a lot of time thinking about this stuff, right. I think. So, yeah, whereas Ron, I feel like, has really become a product of society.
Exactly. Well, anyway, so let's move on. We have a chapter transition here, and I kind of had never really read through these descriptions of the Hogwarts Christmas decorations. It says that the Hogwarts staff had really outdone itself. You mean the house elves?
This is an example of how language can protect the privileged people in society.
Very true, and neglect the underprivileged, too.
Exactly. So that's just by saying the Hogwarts staff, even we as readers probably forget that it was the house elves that did all of this.
Right, and we just learned that this past chapter, too. So it's really showing us, I mean, I think it's very intentional on J.K. Rowling's part that she says the Hogwarts staff instead of the Hogwarts house elves.
Mm-hmm.
But did you remember all these different decorations that are being used in this year? Because it's different than every other year that Harry's been at Hogwarts.
Let's go ahead and go through them.
Okay, so first we have everlasting icicles arranged or attached to the banisters of the marble staircase. So that's kind of, I feel like we've sort of seen those before. But I did not remember the Christmas trees in the Great Hall bedecked with everything from luminous holly berries to real hooting golden owls.
That's interesting.
That sounds like more like animal abuse than the transfiguration lessons to me.
But is it like they're made of gold, or is it that they are like the breed of golden owl? Is that a breed?
Yeah, I think golden owl is a breed. We'll have to consult our owl expert Dan about it, but I'm pretty sure that golden owls are a breed, and I mean the fact that it says real makes me think yes.
I don't know. I'm not finding anything. I know there's like a golden eagle, so that's kind of what made me think of it. Oh, when I googled golden owl, I'm not seeing anything.
Are there owls that are golden in color?
Oh, probably, yes. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
But I kind of like to think that it's like, even though it says real golden owls, maybe it's just like little bewitched, like, you know when Hermione shoots the birds at Ron? Like,
yeah, but I guess... But those are real birds, aren't they?
Well, I know, but that's a little... That's where we're running into some weird territory with magic. Like, can you really just create life like that?
That's a good point.
So this is what I'm thinking, is that maybe the hooting owls are actually just more of a magical creation like that.
It's possible, I guess. It just, the word real kind of throws me off. It would be one thing if it was, like, sentient, or... I guess sentient would also be... If it was, like... moving or something like that, that could be a little bit more ambiguous, but real seems pretty cut and dry. I don't know.
Well, it's also partially from Harry's perspective,
so of course
maybe he doesn't realize that they're not actual like normal owls.
Okay, that makes sense. And then the third thing that we learn about is the suits of armor that are bewitched to sing Christmas carols. And of course we have this little anecdote where it was quite something to hear "O Come All Ye Faithful" sung by an empty helmet that only knew half the words. And then we have Peeves, who is trying to fill in the gaps in the songs with lyrics of his own invention, all of which were very rude. "Oh, come all ye ickle-firsties."
I think you better do the rest of the song, Martha.
I don't think that it'll be appropriate. This is a family podcast.
That's true. We do want to keep it family friendly.
Right. But "Oh, come all ye ickle firsties." That's going to be the first single released by the Real Weird Sisters.
Yeah. Oh, ickle firsties.
Soon will be also a famous musical group.
Very true. I think we already are for our theme song.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah, so then this is kind of finally getting to the culmination where Harry makes a joke about asking Moaning Myrtle to the ball. "I suppose there's always Moaning Myrtle."
Referring to the ghost who haunted the girls' toilets on the second floor.
Yeah, that's a nice reminder so that when we see Moaning Myrtle in a couple chapters in the prefect's bathroom, we don't have to be reminded then who she is. We're hopefully, at least, I hope that in a couple chapters we don't have to be reminded again, but we'll see. So then Ron makes a pact with Harry that when they get back to the common room tonight, they'll both have partners. So that's their agreement, and so Harry's like trying to corner Cho all day, and she's always with a bunch of friends. Didn't she ever go anywhere alone?
Perhaps he could ambush her as she was going into a bathroom.
Harry, don't ambush her.
Kind of creepy sounding.
It is very creepy sounding. So then, did you notice this foreshadowing here? Not foreshadowing, but the mention of a bijouer?
I didn't.
I didn't even notice it until just now, going through this. But it says that he found it hard to concentrate on Snape's potions test, and consequently forgot to add the key ingredient, a bijouer, meaning that he received bottom marks, and this is a test on antidotes. So,
right. This
is great. We've already had a bijouer in the first book when Snape asks Harry what he would do with a bijouer, and then we have it here. I think this is further evidence that this is something that, I mean, I just think, just, let's just say it once and for all, J.K. Rowling is a master, and she is a master of foreshadowing, especially.
All hail to J.K. Rowling.
Bow down.
However, I will firmly support anyone who pleases to call it a bijouer, because that's what I've always heard it in my head as.
But it's bijouer.
I know, but it sounds funny as a bijouer.
It does sound funny as a bijouer, because that's not the correct pronunciation. No, we don't always pronounce things correctly on this podcast, as we've been informed by more than a few people. But bijouer is the correct pronunciation.
However, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I didn't even really notice it on this read-through, but there it is.
There it is. And so then we get the best part of the chapter. Harry goes off on his own. He's just going to have to ask Cho for a private word, that was all. So he finds her emerging from a Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson, and he goes, Cho, could I have a word with you?
And then he thinks furiously to himself, giggling should be made illegal.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay, Harry. So then she follows him out of earshot of her classmates, and so they are in, like, I don't know, the corner of some hall or something, and the words came out before Harry had quite got his tongue around them. Oingo Balmy?
Sorry?
Do you want to go to the ball with me?
And then Harry's like, why did he have to go red right now? Why?
Yeah, I can relate.
I think you better do your Cho impression too, though.
Oh, Harry, I'm really sorry. I've already said I'll go with someone else.
Harry,
oh, okay. No problem. I'm really sorry. And then, it's so awkward. They're just standing there looking at each other, and then Cho's like, well. And then they say goodbye. And then Harry calls after her. Who are you going with? Oh, Cedric. Cedric Diggory. Okay, we know who Cedric is now. It's not a very common name. But I'm really seriously worried about Harry, aren't you?
Why?
He completely forgets about dinner for like the fifth time this book.
That's true. He really has a problem with food, and his relationship with food is not healthy.
And you know why? It's because he was starved as a child.
It's probably true, yeah.
That he's super malnourished, and he doesn't really know it.
All those years in that dark cupboard with no food.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, he's shrunk to the size of the cupboard, so he doesn't need as much food, I guess. But poor Cedric. Poor Cedric, but also poor Harry. Harry's getting super bitter here. It says, he suddenly realized that Cedric was, in fact, a useless pretty boy who didn't have enough brains to fill an egg cup. Okay.
I'm pretty sure, Harry, that Cedric does have... Cedric is pretty smart.
Cedric is very smart.
He's a lot better at magic than you, Harry.
A lot better of a student, too.
He's a useless pretty boy.
Yeah, he didn't have enough brains to fill an egg cup. Sick burn, Harry. I do understand feeling bad here, and like it's sort of a betrayal, it feels like, even though it's not. Like, of course, Cedric did not know that Harry liked Cho too, and like Harry acknowledges early on the chapter, of course, Cho is very pretty and very popular and a year older and etc. It's just kind of, I understand Harry's perspective that it feels like a betrayal, but then it's also irrational.
This whole chapter, it's a lot of these boys having totally irrational emotions toward things. Like, yes. They're just insecure with themselves, and so then they put that on other people.
Oh, totally.
Harry with Cedric, and then Ron with, like, the bashing other girl, like, all the girls. Uh-huh. It really does stem from his own insecurities and how he's mad that, like, somebody who he deems to be unattractive could get asked out before he would ask someone out.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like Hermione, for instance.
Right. So it's just a lot of that. And that's really an underlying theme of this chapter.
Yes, I think so, too. That's a really good assessment. And I hadn't even really thought about it as regarding Harry as well, but it's totally true that that's exactly why he's resenting Cedric in this moment, that well, it's really a reflection
of his insecurities. And why he gets so mad when the girls are giggling and stuff.
Yeah,
it's just like,
exactly.
Okay, you're kind of putting your anger, misdirecting your anger here.
Right, totally. So this is a funny scene, though. When Harry enters the common room, he sees Ron sitting ashen-faced in a distant corner with Ginny. So Ron has
She's talking in a low, soothing voice.
Yes. And there's a sort of blind horror in Ron's face when he looks at Harry. He's like, why did I do it? I don't know what made me do it. And Harry's like, what?
Ron, what? I should not have said that.
Yes. So Ginny reveals that Ron has just asked Fleur to the prom, or not the prom, the ball. And it looks like she's fighting back a smile, but she's being really nice to Ron and being really sympathetic. And Harry goes, you what? You did a what?
Ron, I don't know what made me do it.
I love how he's
what
gasping.
What was I playing at?
And she was standing there talking to Diggory, which of course really, like, makes Harry super mad.
There were people all around. I've gone mad. Everyone watching.
So he says she looked at him like he was a sort of sea slug or something. And then,
she didn't even answer.
And then Ron just ran for it. And then Harry's super bitter. He's like, I bet you just walked past when she was turning on the old charm for Diggory and got a blast of it. But she was wasting her time. He's going with Cho Chang. Like, oh, that's a would-be casual voice for you, right?
It's also, this is a case of, like, I don't really like the way they're talking about Cho here either. Like, well, it's her fault that you had to ask her out. Not really.
Yeah, I think it's really just the whole way they're talking about everybody, just referring to Cedric as Diggory is really annoying, and then just, like,
he was going, turning on the old charm for Diggory.
I swear, I always thought that this said that she was turning on the charm for old Diggory, which makes it way worse. Calling him old Diggory. Then Harry dully says, I asked her to go with me just now, and she told me. I love...
And then it says Ginny suddenly stopped smiling.
I cannot overstate how much I love Harry saying things dully.
I know.
It's my favorite thing. He says the password dully to the fat lady earlier in this chapter, or just like a page ago. And it just is great. So then Ron and Harry are just like commiserating over their woes. How are the only ones left who haven't got anyone? Well, except Neville. Well, Neville actually does have somebody. So then the two of them start laughing and being super mean to Neville. Maybe this is why, like, the director of the fourth movie decided to put the scene of Neville dancing so that it could be the audience making fun of Neville instead of watching Harry and Ron be super rude about him. But I'd rather just not even have the scene at all.
Yeah, well, so, apparently, Neville asked Hermione, and Ron and Harry think this is the funniest thing ever.
Yeah, they're cracking up so much.
And then Ron's also laughing because Hermione told Neville that she's already going with someone. Ha! As if!
Okay, Ron. I hate that he just assumes that she wouldn't have a date. I mean, I get it a little bit, but it's really annoying.
Right. And then Ron says, she didn't want to go with Neville. I mean, who would?
And then Ginny gets super defensive. Well, not super defensive, but she's annoyed. She's like, don't laugh.
She's actually going with Neville, yeah.
Right. That hasn't been revealed yet.
Yeah.
I'd go with Neville.
Ginny is... So, it again, it's like Harry and Ron are the main culprits of just having all this, directing their anger incorrectly. Mm-hmm. But Ginny also a little bit, because here she suddenly stopped smiling once Harry said that he asked Cho to go to the ball.
Yeah, and then later on when Ron, like, asks Ginny out for Harry, she looks extremely miserable because she has to tell him that she can't go with them.
Which she was, did a really, I mean, it was really nice of her to go with Neville, and I think, like, again, shows how much more mature she is even than her older brother, but...
Neville's a really good dancer.
It's true, he did a lot of practicing ahead of time.
Oh my God, that scene is the worst. That is the verifiable worst scene of this movie, I think.
Okay,
you know what else is bad is when Fred and George, it's like after the first task, and Fred and George do this really weird chant where they're like, packing it all together, never, or something. Like, I don't know all the words.
Okay, well, I don't actually remember the movie that closely right now, because I haven't seen it in a while, but...
Yeah. So anyway, Hermione comes in, and Ginny reveals to Hermione that they've just been turned down to the ball, and Hermione's being really lofty, which is great. She goes, all the good-looking ones taken, Ron. Eloise Midgen's starting to look quite pretty now, is she?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you'll find someone somewhere who will have you.
It's pretty hilarious. I do love Hermione and how she's acting in this scene.
Yeah, don't you just love Ron here, too?
Yeah. Hermione, Neville's right. You are a girl.
Oh, well spotted.
She says it acidly.
Yeah. I thought I made that with my impression. Thanks for shattering my bubble there.
Just wanted to make sure in case it wasn't totally clear.
Okay. Could have been vehemently, I guess.
Yeah. And then Ron, like, as if he has to spell out what he means to Hermione.
I know.
He's like, well, you can come with one of us. And then I can't.
Oh, come on. We need partners. We're going to look really stupid if we haven't got any. Everyone else has. And then Hermione confirms that she is going to the ball with somebody.
Yeah, Ron's like, no, you're not. You just said that to get rid of Neville.
Yeah. Okay. And then, Ron's being so annoying. Hermione is like, just because it's taken you 3 years to notice Ron doesn't mean no one else has spotted I'm a girl. Then Ron grins again and he goes, okay, we know you're a girl. That do? Will you come now? Oh, what a romantic proposal, Ron.
Oh, it's kind of the worst.
It's really annoying. It kind of drives me nuts. So then Hermione storms off for good reason again.
And Ron still doesn't believe her. He's just like, she's lying.
Yeah, and then Ginny says she's not lying, but she's not going to tell them who she's going with.
Which is good. I like how Ginny has Hermione's back in this scene.
Yes, me too. And then Ron, we mentioned this, Ron says, well, Ginny, you can go with Harry. And then she's like, no, I'm going with Neville. She looks extremely miserable. And she says she's going to go get dinner. And so she gets up and walks out the portrait hole, her head bowed. Pretty sure she would just went to have a good cry, don't you think?
Well, if it was you, you would be, so...
Okay, she looked extremely miserable, then says, I think I'll go and have dinner, and she goes, walks out the portrait hole with her head bowed. I'm pretty sure that she's hiding tears right now.
Yeah, that seems like a logical conclusion.
She's only 13, after all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would have this reaction as a 21-year-old, so...
She already knows that her soulmate is sitting right there, but he doesn't even know enough to ask her to the ball himself.
No. So then here come Parvati and Lavender, and the time has come for drastic action.
Yeah, so Harry finally gets it together enough to go over and just ask Parvati to the ball.
Right, and this makes sense. It doesn't make sense to me that Parvati doesn't already have a date, but...
Yeah, who is Dean going with?
I always wonder that too.
Because Lavender, turns out, is going with Seamus, so Lavender can't go with Ron.
That was me giggling.
Yeah.
So then,
this part kind of cracks me up, too, though, because Harry says in a low voice so Ron wouldn't hear, can't you think of anyone who'd go with Ron?
I love that. And then she's like, what about Hermione Granger? I like how she has to say Hermione's last name there. Like, oh, which Hermione are you talking about?
Yeah, and then Harry tells them that she has a date, and they, of course, get really excited about that. For the gossip, not because they're happy for Hermione.
Yeah. And so then they've come up with the idea of asking Padma, Parvati's twin sister, you know, in Ravenclaw.
I'll ask her if you'd like.
And then Harry says that would be great. Let me know, will you?
And then Harry's like, he says he's really hoping that Padma Patil's nose was dead center. Okay. Has he not seen her before? It's really not that big of a class.
Seriously, I always get a little confused about that too, that when they first see Padma for the ball, they act like it's like the first time ever. I guess we don't really see them in class with the Ravenclaws very often at all, which is odd, because we see them with Hufflepuffs and with Slytherins. So are the Ravenclaws just in class by themselves or something because they're like the gifted students? That would make sense, actually.
Yeah.
Poor Hermione got shafted there.
Maybe that's probably why the Gryffindors and Slytherins are always together, and the Hufflepuffs probably have their own class. I won't say what level that's for.
The Gryffindors are with Hufflepuffs a lot, too, though, like in Hermione.
That's true. So maybe Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw are just a little bit more advanced.
No, I think it's just Ravenclaw's advanced, because the Gryffindors are obviously with the Hufflepuffs often and with the Slytherins often.
That's true.
it's like Ravenclaws are just off by themselves all the time. They don't ever have to be with other... They don't ever have to fraternize with the other houses.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of the chapter. I thought it was a really fun one. There wasn't a ton of, like... Well, there was more foreshadowing and stuff like that than I was expecting, actually, but... I guess
with the bijoire.
Yeah, with the bijoire and with the bijoire. Yeah, no. Anyway, I thought it was a really fun one. I'm not really sure where to rank it, though. What do you think?
Well, if I'm looking at the chapter rankings, I think it should be pretty high just for the amount of fun I had with it.
Yeah, but I mean, definitely had fun talking about it, especially. I think reading it was not quite as fun as talking about it, but I don't know.
I'm thinking it needs to be at least, I would say, at least above the Goblet of Fire, the chapter.
Yeah, that seems right to me, too.
I just feel like that chapter was interesting, but fairly, like, just information-heavy.
Yeah, with a cliffhanger.
Yeah, and then, but I can't remember the Four Champions as, well. I feel like that was good and
I think better, that's I better, think. Yeah, because that's so a really important chapter.
Yeah, so I would say right in between the Four Champions and the Goblet of Fire.
That seems perfect to me, too.
That's so number nine. Spot nine.
Yeah.
So, top half, but not quite at the very top.
That seems perfect, I think.
Yeah.
Real weirdo, are we thinking McGonagall or what?
I was actually leaning toward Hermione. I know she's gotten it once this book, but she really was doing a lot for girl power and just kind of... sticking up for herself, and I just really enjoyed her in this chapter.
I did too. That's a good point.
And McGonagall was funny, but she wasn't in it very long.
Yeah, but she's never gonna get it this book if we don't give it to her now.
We don't know that.
I do.
She's funny in the movie, but I feel like Hermione was the one who really stood out to me in this chapter.
Okay, I guess I don't want to make you cave to me like I always do, apparently, so.
Ha ha ha, I win.
Yeah, I'll let you have this one. I mean, I was kind of excited about how we hadn't given the real weirdo to the same person twice yet this book.
Well, but don't you think Hermione deserves it?
I mean, she was great in this chapter. I'm not going to deny that, obviously.
Yeah.
But I did just, I thought McGonagall was a lot of fun.
She was a lot of fun, but... I think she would have been a little bit too much of the obvious choice.
I don't think so, but okay. That's fine. Oh, I'll let it be.
You sound so excited.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can find those lists of our chapter rankings and Real Weirdos on our website, realweirdsisters.com. Of course, we'd love it if you'd also visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/realweirdsisters, and follow us on Twitter @realweirdsisters. We've pimped the Patreon quite a bit on this episode, but I do just want to mention our website one more time, patreon.com/realweirdsisters. lots of really cool levels and rewards that you can investigate on there. And we've just about a week ago released our October Expecto Patron cast, which was a lot of fun. So there was some information about the theme song that was revealed in that particularly. So if you're interested in that, all you have to do is pay us. And if you don't, if you want to support the show in another way, a great way to do so is to rate and review us in iTunes, or whatever podcast, podcast platform you use. We wanted to read a 5-star rating that we got, a couple weeks ago now. So it's from a listener, So Sparky, and the title is "I'm a Wart." This one says, "I found this podcast midway through my half marathon training program and decided to start at chapter one. Honestly, it's a perfect way to make runs and driving to work and working and grocery shopping and everything fly by. I love listening and truly feel like the third sister as I laugh, nod my head, and sometimes even talk back to Alice and Martha. This podcast has revealed even more to me about the wizarding world that I've grown up with, and I'm so thankful for that. I can't wait to bring the Real Weird Sisters with me 13.1 magical miles in a few short weeks." So I hope we timed this correctly, and hopefully you're running your half marathon very soon, or it'd be great if it was you were listening to this as you were running. But I love when listeners kind of share their story in the reviews. It's really fun to get that idea and see how people are listening to it and what they're doing while they're listening.
Yeah, so good luck if you haven't run the race already, and if you have, then I hope it went well, but I'm glad that we could help you with that. That's pretty awesome.
If you've already run it, I would also say good luck with your recovery from the half marathon. Hopefully you're not recovering too much.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So that brings us to the end of the show. Tomorrow is Halloween, if you're listening to this on the day that this is being released. So we do have a special surprise for you that's going to be in your podcast feed tomorrow for Halloween. So no spoilers what that is, but it's going to be a fun one if you like Halloween things.
It's going to be I think it's going to be a lot more fun than Harry's first Halloween.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be a lot more fun than Harry's 12th Halloween, or sorry, his 13th Halloween. Technically, when he was 12, he went to the death day party.
Yes, yes, very good point.
And I think hopefully it'll be maybe equally as important as Harry's 12th Halloween when he was 11 and he became friends with Hermione.
Okay, yeah, that's a great great sell, Alice. I think that I think people are going to be excited because of that. So be sure to be on the lookout for that. And thanks again for tuning in this week. We'll be back next week with Chapter 23, The Yule Ball. And until then, we're the Real Weird Sisters.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the Real Weird Sisters. All you other weird sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the Real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up. Please stand up.